The people want peace. That is thoroughly and utterly clear. They've seen enough since October 7th when Hamas militants invaded Israel from Gaza and murdered over 1,000 people. It was a terrible day. And, of course, there was no one there to help the people who live in the kibbutzes here on the Gaza border. I have people I know, friends, who live in a kibbutz or two in Israel, especially the ones down there by Gaza. You have to understand, the people that live there, generally, the vast majority of them are, they believe in peace. They believe in human rights. They hate Netanyahu. They didn't vote for him. They don't want to vote for him. They want him out of there, just like over 80% of Israel wants him out of there. And yet, because he's a butcher, he's not going anywhere. And because we hand him all the tools that a butcher needs to slaughter what will probably by the morning be now over 30,000 people, Palestinians, civilians, two-thirds of them children, women, a lot more who are older, elderly people. And the IDF, the Netanyahu cabinet, the war cabinet, they don't give a rat's ass who dies, just as long as they're Palestinians, because you know they're guilty. Because a few hundred of their people, Palestinians, got on scooters and hang gliders, broke out of their outdoor prison, and in a mad race to kill the people they see as their captors, their jailers, the people that have kept them in this open-air prison for 14, 15, 16 years. And it just continues every single day. And we fund it. We Americans fund this. And Joe Biden, President Biden, you are the topic of discussion today again on my podcast, Rumble with Michael Moore. And I don't know if I mentioned this at the beginning. I am Michael Moore. And I voted for you, Mr. Biden. I'm probably, as I've mentioned before, one of the few people listening to this podcast right now that has been to Gaza in person, been to Palestine, the West Bank, had Israeli soldiers firing weapons at me and the other journalists who were there to see what was going on and report what was going on. This first trip was back 39 years ago. 39 years ago I was there and I saw the truth. I couldn't believe it. I guess I did believe it, but because I was seeing it with my own two eyes. And once you've seen this, you can't unsee it. Every day around the world, I would say probably close to every hour of every day around the world, there is some kind of protest going on calling for an end to this war. It's not really a war. It's an assault against an imprisoned people who have to live under apartheid rules. They don't get to have a say in what's going on. They don't vote. They don't have human rights the way Israeli citizens have them. And let me tell you, there are thousands upon thousands of these Israeli citizens who are sickened by this and who oppose the apartheid regime of Benjamin Netanyahu and who have taken to the streets every day in Israel and who know that Mr. Netanyahu has absolutely little interest in getting those hostages back. The longer the hostages are being held, the longer he can keep the carpet bombing, the massacre going on, that he can claim some justification for it. I mean, I don't really have any contact with people in Hamas, but I would say, if somehow you're listening to this, don't hurt anybody. Don't kill anybody. The hostages are civilians too, and I can understand you're probably pretty upset right now. You're probably also pretty confused as to why would the Prime Minister of Israel bomb all these neighborhoods where the hostages are being kept. Why would he risk their lives? I mean, I think I read somewhere where over 20 to 30 of the hostages have already died as a result of the massacre that's taken place. The massacre on the part of the Israeli Defense Forces. Every day, there's a protest. Every day, there's, and I mean, people send me video. They send me selfies. I mean, from all over the world. There's one woman in Tokyo. Her name is Nori. And every day, she conducts a one-woman protest on a street corner with a different sign each day in Tokyo. Just standing there, calling out to people to please stop the madness. Man, it's amazing. I know some people in this country don't understand why. Why has the whole world risen up to oppose this, to oppose what Netanyahu is doing? It's going on. I can't tell you how many times I've run across small protests, large protests, wherever I happen to be. And Sunday night on the beach in Santa Monica, California, the annual Independent Film Spirit Awards. The Spirit Awards were taking place. It's the awards each year that are given out to independent films. And there was one person with a tape on a loop with a loudspeaker standing legally on the other side of where the awards were taking place, outdoors behind the police barricades, a public space. And he turned on this loudspeaker. And for nearly 2 hours, if you were watching this on the streaming channels it was on, it went for almost 2 hours. And you could hear it. Everybody in the big tent where the awards were taking place on the beach could hear it. People watching on TV could hear it. All the presenters, the people winning awards. And one award winner, a man who made a film called Fremont, was being given the John Cassavetes Award. John Cassavetes is a great, one of the really godfathers of the modern day independent film, starting back in the 60s. And so they give an award out to a filmmaker that makes their films in the spirit of John Cassavetes. And he went up to accept his award, and you could, you know, hear the protester, free Palestine, free Palestine. You know, stop the killing. Ceasefire now. Free, free Palestine. Free, free Palestine. And he said, you know, I think whatever he's saying out there outside the tent is probably more important than what I have to say collecting an award. And the whole audience, nobody got up, ran out of their seat to go beat the guy up. The police showed up and said, well, he's on public property and he has a right to free speech. And even the host of the show, A.D. Bryant, said, you know, we're on the beach And, you know, we support free speech. And that, and everybody applauded, and even though they were all there to this important day for indie filmmakers. But nobody wanted to shut him up, and he wasn't. He was not shut down. The police did not arrest him. The organizers of the show apparently asked the police not to arrest him, that in the spirit of independence and independent film, this lone individual, it was necessary that he was there and saying what he said. And they didn't release his name, whatever. I'll put up some video. So funny when you, if you've traveled to Israel and to Palestine, if you have been to Gaza, one of the kind of interesting, amazing things is that how similar the people, the culture, the food is, because both groups of people, the Jews of Israel and the Arabs and Muslims of Palestine, are cousins. They're both Semitic peoples. When you hear that, oh, that's anti-Semitic. Well, which anti-Semitic thing are you referring to? Because the Arabs are Semitic people and the Jews are Semitic people in that part of the world. And just looking at the guy and trying to figure, and I, you know, because so many of my friends or people I know that who are Jewish Americans have spent a lot of time since October at many, many protests trying to stop this, trying to stop the killing of Palestinians, trying to stop what Netanyahu wants to do next, which is to push them into the desert, into Egypt. And Jewish Voice for Peace, which is an incredible organization. I encourage you to join it. It's a Jewish organization, but everybody is welcome to join. You should sign up for their newsletter. You should attend any rally or protest that they're putting on. It's very powerful and very brave of them to take this stand. And I have so much love and respect for them, because they don't have to do that, I guess, right? I mean, I guess you do if you have a conscience, but, you know, they could just go about living their lives in New York and D.C. and Boston and L.A. and San Francisco and Detroit and Chicago. But no, they have been showing up, standing up for the Palestinian people. It's very uplifting to see this. And it's not surprising. Because if you are Jewish, or if you have friends, co-workers, classmates, neighbors who are Jewish, and if you've spent any time talking to them about Judaism and what it means at its core, what we are witnessing is the opposite of what their book says, of what they are supposed to believe in. And they know it, and they're crushed by this. And the others, who maybe are not as left-leaning as some of the anti-war groups, the Israeli and the Jewish anti-war groups, they've figured this out by now, that Netanyahu and his war council have made them not safer, but less safe. Less safe. Other than people who are just not thinking straight in Israel, other than that group, those who are really thinking this out know that what the end game is here, what the result of all this is going to be, and it's not going to be a safer people for the people who live in Israel. And in order to be safe, to not have any more bloodshed on either side, that the main fighting unit in the so-called war, because one side has all the guns, all the battleships, all the fighter jets. Let's go down the whole list. The Palestinians have some improvised bombs they've put together from parts of bombs that, when they've been bombed, they go and grab the parts where, if the bomb didn't go off, they then have been trying to form their own missile brigade out of this nonsense. Ay, ay, ay. Well, whoever you are out there on the beach in Santa Monica, thank you. Thank you for doing that Sunday night. That took a lot of courage, too, because stuff like that can go south pretty quickly. I hope you're okay now. If for some awful reason they've arrested you, DM me, send me a message here, send me an email at mike@michaelmoore.com. I'll put up the money to bail you out of there in Santa Monica, if that's the case. I have a feeling it's not going to be the case, in part because everybody, I know, not everybody, but I'll say it again, everybody is against what's going on. I mean, think about this. In the last couple weeks, look at all the labor unions that have come out against Netanyahu, against the IDF, against this massacre. The United Auto Workers have taken a very bold stand. They want a ceasefire right now, tonight. And it's not just the United Auto Workers. It's the National Nurses Union. It's the National Flight Attendants Union. It's the National... I mean, seriously, if the flight attendants have turned against you, really? I mean, you can look up the list. I mean, there's at least 200 either national or local labor unions in this country alone opposed to Biden continuing this war, opposed to us funding more armaments and more death machines. Over 200 unions. Those are just the unions. The National Education Association, the America's Teachers. I mean, just look at the list. Just look at the list. And if you are just randomly and without thinking, continuing to support Netanyahu and what that government is doing, you should look at this list. I know you're not going to want to look at it, because it's full of people that have always supported Israel and would stand and fight anyone who would harm a single one of our Jewish brothers and sisters. I've said that over. I've taken that pledge over and over. And I know many of you have too. We will never let happen to the Jewish people what happened in the last century. And yet, those same people, including me, man, it's over. I mean, those of you supporting the war, those of you supporting the massacre, the killing of, what is it now, almost 20,000 women and children, you supporting that? No, you're done. And President Biden, this is what's really upsetting us, is that you are risking putting Trump back in the White House. What is wrong with you? There was an amazing, I'll post it here on the site, op-ed by Michelle Goldberg today in the New York Times, saying basically, and she's writing this from Michigan, where she's been getting ready for the primary on Tuesday. She wrote this as a warning to Biden, saying, you don't get it. You're going to lose Michigan. And if you lose Michigan, it really could probably mean you're going to lose in November. And Trump will be back in the Oval Office. And you're the one who's going to be held responsible for this. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that after we thank a couple of our underwriters here today. But I'm just so upset. And I'm grateful to everybody who has protested, who's been out there, whether it's the awards out in LA, whether it's the upcoming Oscars. Oh my God, I don't know if anybody saw this. The Berlin Film Festival was this past week, and the awards were handed out also there. big award season yesterday. And the film that won Best Documentary, this is in Berlin, called No Other Land, a film about the brutalization of the Palestinian people and the hardcore, violent apartheid actions and regime from Tel Aviv to the Palestinian people. This film was made by both Israeli Jews and Palestinian Muslims. They made it together. They focused on one village where Netanyahu and his gang, the plan is and was to remove everybody, just annihilate this village, get them all out of there, send them south, send them to Egypt, send them wherever. And it won Best Documentary. And I'm going to actually, you know what, Angie, if we could just play, there's the Channel 11 in Israel put up about 30 seconds of their acceptance speech in Berlin for winning this award for Best Documentary. And it was so moving, and the people were just in tears watching this film. These are Germans. You know, one of the co-directors, Yuval Abraham, gave the acceptance speech, and he's standing beside Basil Adra, one of his co-directors. I think there's like four of them, a woman named Rachel and somebody else who made this film. And, you know, they don't have a distributor yet. They don't have one here in the U.S., but again, my plan is to just jot them a note and let them know anything I can do to help get distribution in the U.S. so people can see the truth of what's going on. That's what I'm here for. Why? Because I have been that way since I was a teenager, supporting our Jewish brothers and sisters, protecting the people in Israel, a place for the survivors, the victims of the Holocaust to be able to go and be safe. And of course, what they've learned in these last 5 months is not only are they not safe, and not only will they not be protected by their own government, they've lost the support of the world. And very specifically in this country, of young people, of the Arab and Muslim community, many other people of color, and they're all very upset and very angry. This isn't like taking a position on student loans, repaying the debt. This isn't about a border wall here with Mexico. This issue is so fundamental. If you don't know people that actually will vote on one issue, I mean, I'm sure many of you have this feeling. How many people since Roe v. Wade was eliminated almost 2 years ago now? Do you think of that issue like women's rights, the right to their own bodies to determine what they want to do if they want to bring a child into this world, that was ripped from them? Anybody here going to make any decisions this year politically based on that one issue? I think you are. And I certainly am. Well, this slaughter of innocents in Gaza, that could affect this election. Angie, let's just play 30 seconds from the director, co-director, on winning the award at the Berlin Film Festival for Best Documentary of the festival.
I want to say we are standing in front of you now. Me and Basil are the same age. I am Israeli, Basil is Palestinian. And in 2 days, we will go back to a land where we are not equal. I am living under a civilian law, and Basil is under military law. We live 30 minutes from one another, but I have voting rights. Basil is not having voting rights. I'm free to move where I want in this land. Basil is, like millions of Palestinians, locked in the occupied West Bank. This situation of apartheid between us, this inequality, it has to end.
People in Israel saw that on TV last night. Very powerful. And I want to read you something else. Yuval Abraham, one of the co-directors, the one who just gave that speech from the award stage in Berlin, also said this afterwards to a German press. He said, quote, "I know Germans have a lot of guilt for what happened in the Second World War." Abraham added that many of his relatives were killed during the Holocaust. Quote, "Don't use this guilt now and weaponize it, and refuse to call for a ceasefire." Speaking to the German people here. "Use it to help us reach a political solution. Use it to pressure the state of Israel to end the occupation." Wow. It's, the more this happens, and it happens every day, the more that people speak out, take a stand, give up their moment in the spotlight. I mean, he's on this big stage, he's live on German television, he's winning this award, and he gives up that time to say, you know, there's something more important going on here. His film is called No Other Land. I'll do my best to make sure everybody listening to this gets to see it. Let me just, I got to pause and thank our underwriters here, and then I'll come back in just a second. But let me just take this moment to thank the good people who underwrite this, who allow me to have my voice and have it heard, who do their best so that I don't have to stand on a beach in Santa Monica with a bullhorn or a loudspeaker all by myself. Today, we've got three underwriters, and the first one I want to thank is Netflix and their incredible film that's been nominated for a Best International Feature, Society of the Snow. Society of the Snow is one of the most intense movies I've seen in the last few years. I mean, so well done. It's based on the true story, which I'm sure many of you might remember. Back in 1972, there was an airplane crash in the Andes Mountains in South America. There was a rugby team on board. Those who lived had to basically endure 72 days of brutal, unbelievable suffering. But they were determined to live. They were going to survive. You've seen a couple films like this before, but I'm telling you, my friend, you've never seen anything like this. One review called it the most incredible survival story of all time. Another critic said this is a deeply felt portrait of togetherness, brotherhood, and survival. At this year's Goya Awards in Spain, this film, Society of the Snow, won 12 Goyas. That's their Oscars, including for Best Film, Best Director, on and on and on. It really took the country and South America by storm. And now we're just now getting to see this incredible, incredible movie thanks to Netflix. And it's nominated for Best International Feature at the Oscars here in a couple weeks. And it also has another nomination, I believe, for hair and makeup. Yes, it's heartbreaking. It's intense. But there is such an enormous heart at the center of this film. And I want to encourage you to see it. It's called Society of the Snow. You can see it on Netflix. You won't regret spending a couple of hours with this amazing movie, Society of the Snow. Okay, now the Democratic primary in Michigan is Tuesday, the 27th of February, is the primary. Now, of course, you know, Biden's on the ballot. There's a couple of minor candidates that have been on other ballots in these primaries, but they've really picked up no votes and no delegates. So it's, you know, it's Biden's. I think everybody knows that where we're at now, who the two candidates are going to be in November. It's going to be Joe Biden and Donald Trump. So there's no doubt about, you know, Biden winning the primary tomorrow. But a group in Michigan, good people that I know, it's a combination of progressives, progressive left, Arab Americans in the Detroit and Flint area, and people who are just absolutely fed up with this war in Gaza and the fact that you and I are paying for it. So they've come up with a good idea. It's called Listen to Michigan. And we know what's happened in the past when you don't listen to Michigan. The Clinton campaign, Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016, decided not to campaign in Michigan or Wisconsin, lost both states. And as I told you last week, they lost Michigan by an average of 2 votes per precinct to Donald Trump. He won Michigan by an average of two votes per precinct. So this has been a swing state for some time. It's very Democratic, very blue right now. Democrats control both houses in the state capitol, the House and the Senate. They control the Supreme Court. It's up and down and all over the place. We have a Democratic governor, Democratic lieutenant governor, Democratic attorney general, Democratic secretary of state. The lieutenant governor is black. The governor is a woman. The attorney general is gay. I mean, it's Michigan has become a very, very progressive state. We have a new president of the UAW, United Auto Workers Union, that one of the best leaders of the UAW that we've had in a very, very long time. So things have been looking up, going good. We picked up another seat in Congress in the midterms. So things should be okay. Except I'm gonna put a link here on the site, this op-ed yesterday on Sunday in the New York Times by Michelle Goldberg, where she says basically that Biden has upset so many tens of thousands of people in the state of Michigan with this indiscriminate slaughter. His word. He called Israeli the bombing they're doing is indiscriminate, but he only says that privately. He won't say it out loud publicly. And Michelle Goldberg wrote yesterday that Biden, because he has not listened to the people in Michigan, the Democratic voters, 72% are against Netanyahu and against this war. They don't want any more money going to the military in Israel right now until there's a ceasefire, this is stopped, and there has to be a whole new conversation now about the occupation. Occupations are wrong. Apartheid is wrong. We all know this. Why have we let this go for so long? Well, they're not going to let it go anymore. I got to tell you, the mail that I'm getting from young people in Michigan, from people in the Arab American community, wow, my friends. I should post some of these. I don't know. I have to get their permission and everything probably. But I mean, you read this and you think, oh my God. I mean, they're not going to vote for Trump in November. But my fear is that they're going to stay home. Can't stay home. Trump can't come back. That's the only way Trump can win, is if the people against him don't show up. Don't show up. Don't vote for Biden. So how do we get this message through to Biden? He's not listening to the people of Michigan. He's not listening to its young people. He's not listening to the Arab American community. And so some of the people in Detroit came up with this great idea called Listen to Michigan. This is a movement that's only about 2 weeks old, and it has caught on fire, let me tell you, my friends. I'm just telling you this as a Michigander. There are people by the thousands who are going to vote. You know, there's the line that says Joe Biden, Marianne Williamson is the next line, Dean Reynolds. Those are the other, you know, candidates that are running. And then there's a line that says uncommitted. It allows you to say, you know, right now, I'm just not too happy with things. I'm not saying I'm not going to vote for Biden in November. Certainly nobody wants Trump back in there. So you can vote uncommitted tomorrow. And there is a movement afoot, especially in southeastern Michigan. Many of our cities are majority black in Michigan. Detroit, Flint, Pontiac, Saginaw. I think Lansing is. And then over on the west side of the state, Benton Harbor. It's, as they say, a very diverse state. And to purposely piss off young people, people of color, women, Arab Americans, it's just, you know, why would you do that? I don't get it. I don't get it. So a strong message needs to be sent to Joe Biden tomorrow in Michigan. We all need to mark that little box that says uncommitted. If he sees how many people do that, maybe it'll sink in that he's in trouble. And one place you can't be in trouble these days is Michigan. He has to win Michigan. But he has to know just how upset people are. People have lost family members, Arab Americans, the Muslim community. Just in that area of Michigan, there's like 250,000 Arab and Muslim Americans. Voters. I mentioned the cities that are majority black. We have majority Arab and Muslim cities in Michigan. We have cities where the mayors are Muslim. We have cities where the majority of the city council are Arab Americans. You probably didn't know this about Michigan. It's got the largest percentage of Arab and Muslim voters in this country. And by the way, these Arab Americans and Muslim Americans, they were our neighbors. That we grew up with them. They worked in the factories next to our dads and our grandmothers and grandfathers. And they are loved. They are loved by their neighbors, their coworkers, their classmates. You know, most Arab Americans in Michigan will tell you, this is a place of acceptance. This is not a place of bigotry. It's not a place where they have to worry about violence against them. Not that they probably should always worry about that, no matter where they are in this country at this point. But wow. There was a story in the Times earlier this week about the different factions on the campus of the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, where there are a lot of Arab American students and there's a lot of Jewish students. And it told this little known history of the University of Michigan that I've never seen this in a national publication. We know it in Michigan, but back in the, let's call it the 20s, 30s, 40s, the first half of the 20th century, if you were Jewish in this country, it was not easy to get into a good university. They all had caps for they will accept only a minimal number of Jewish students and no more than that. They put a cap on it. It was very discriminatory. It was anti-Semitic. And we're talking about the Ivy League schools, the other elite colleges. Either no Jews allowed or few Jews allowed. And the people of Michigan and the people that ran the University of Michigan were frankly appalled at this bigotry. And so, and the Times story sort of made this clear that while here we are now in 2024 and you have a different campus groups on different sides of the slaughter in Gaza, but the reason that there's even different groups is because the University of Michigan, 60, 70, 80 years ago, first of all, put the word out that we have no caps here for Jewish students. We will accept if your grades were such or whatever, and it didn't matter what you were, if you were Jewish or not Jewish or whatever. And this is way back, all those years ago. So it's at a point now where there are, it's according to the article, there are now 5,000 Jewish students in Ann Arbor. I don't, you know, I should have looked this up, but I think there's, I'm talking about undergrads now. There's maybe 35,000 undergrads that go to the University of Michigan, and 5,000 of them are Jewish. I mean, but that's because that's decades of having an anti-bigotry policy. And word got around the Jewish communities around the country that there was this place, a really great school that welcomed all Jews. And as times progressed and into the second half of the 20th century, all Arab Americans, Muslims were welcome too. So right now on the campus, you've got 5,000 Jewish undergrads and you've got 2,500 to 3,000 somewhere in there of Muslim and or Arab students. You understand that's huge, right? It's huge because, again, you probably have to be from Michigan to know this history, but The first black mayor in the country was Floyd McCree of Flint, Michigan, 1965-66, before Carl Stokes was the mayor of Cleveland. Floyd McCree in Flint, Michigan. Flint, Michigan, the first city in the country to pass an open housing ordinance, non-discrimination against people because of their race or their religion, their ethnic origins, whatever. So if I'm explaining this correctly, people in Michigan don't like apartheid. I was there when Nelson Mandela, when he got out of prison and he came and did that tour of the country and he came to Tiger Stadium in downtown Detroit. And I got to hang with this small group that was there that welcomed him and brought him there. And it's just who we are. And I'm not saying it's perfect. Believe me, it's not. I'm not saying we don't have bigots. We got a boatload of them, just like every place else. But when we see the kind of stuff that's going on now, what Israel is doing to the Palestinians, the massacre of all these civilians, of children, of women, of the elderly and all that, people are sick of it. And the disappointment in Biden that he has embraced Netanyahu, that he has essentially given them a blank check. Here, more armaments, more bullets, more everything. And it's not to protect the Israeli people. If they weren't protected in October, that's on their prime minister, who pulled the army back from the Gaza border for still a yet to be explained reason. Or the investigative reporting that the Hebrew daily Haaretz in Israel has done about how much money over the last decade Netanyahu has put into the pockets of Hamas, because he was trying to create a wedge between the two Palestinian groups, Hamas in Gaza and the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, thinking that if I can build this wedge, have them fight each other, we win. We'll destroy them all. So I tell you that little story about the history of the University of Michigan because there is going to be an effect and a blowback, I believe, in the Michigan primary. And a lot of people, I mean, you have like a former congressman, Andy Levin, who's Jewish. He's actually an observant Jew. He was the president of a synagogue there in Detroit. But because he talks about Palestinian rights and treating them the right way and not just giving a blank check to the Netanyahu government. When he ran in the last election, he was an incumbent Democratic member of Congress, and AIPAC and the Israeli lobby put up millions of dollars to get rid of him, and they did. But he was quoted here in the Times, and he still supports Biden. He's going to vote for Biden in November, but tomorrow in the primary, he's voting uncommitted because he's wants to be part of this group that's trying to send a message to Joe Biden that you've got to knock it off or you're going to lose this election. He told the Times, he said, really, I'm doing this more to save Biden than anything else because he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand Michigan. And as the headline said over Michelle Goldberg's column, you lose Michigan, you lose the election in November. So that's what we're all up to tomorrow. And I want to encourage anybody and everybody to think about doing this. Remember, you're not against Biden. You can vote for him in November, all this, but we have to stop the killing of these kids now, this week. This week, no more. Can't wait till November on this. People are dying every single day, and they're dying with bullets and tanks and bombs that you and I pay for out of our tax dollars. That means we're partly responsible for this if we sit by and do nothing and say nothing. So please join with all of us, all the people in our group, the Jewish Voice for Peace, all the anti-war activists, the progressive left, Arab Americans, And really, let me just say this to my fellow white people. You know, it's moments like this where if you don't stop and think about the fact that how you and I have benefited from white privilege for a very long time, long before we were even born, things got set up in this country in a certain way that if you were white, the doors opened a little wider and a little faster. And, you know, you didn't go through the same criminal justice system that Black and Hispanic and Arab Americans go through. So this is one of these times where, you know, maybe you don't want to do this. This is a little, I don't want to hit, you know, Biden, he's done a lot of good things. He has done a lot of good things. And Biden, you know, we got to get behind him. Trump can't come back. You're right about that. But you have to also say, you know, but our Arab American neighbors here in Michigan, our Muslim neighbors, our Jewish neighbors who are for peace, we can't let them stand by themselves on this. We have to stand with them. We have to make up for some of that white privilege. This is one of these moments where you can do something constructive. We're trying to send a message to an otherwise decent president of the United States who has made a fatal error, who has been the bank for the massacre of tens of thousands of people since October. And we cannot be silent. Silence is violence. We need to stand up for our Arab neighbors in the state of Michigan, the people that they've lost back home, all the hassle and trouble they have to go through now. Once again, what they had to put up with after 9/11 simply because they were Arab or Muslim. Do you feel good about this? I certainly don't. I don't want any of this done in my name. Don't write me and say, Mike, you can't say this kind of stuff. We can't. We have to stop Trump. We'll stop Trump. In fact, because we're going to take the stand tomorrow, we know that we're going to have to double and triple our efforts to make sure that Biden doesn't fall off the rails here, so that Trump doesn't come back. We know this. But right now, we have to stop the slaughter. It can't go on another day. Biden needs to wake up, as I said, on Wednesday morning and go, holy shit, what happened in Michigan?
Well, sir, we tried to tell you, you know, there's a heck of a lot of Arabs and Muslims and Chaldeans and Lebanese and Syrians and Palestinians. They're pretty distraught. They have a conscience. A conscience does not allow them to pick up that pen on election day and color in a little circle by your name. Not when they've got family who are dying, family who are homeless. 70,000 Palestinians in Gaza that have been wounded. 70,000? Plus the 30,000 dead? It's not right. The whole world knows it's not right. We in Michigan know it's not right. We're going to mark that little circle, that little box tomorrow that says uncommitted. Not against, uncommitted. And you, Mr. President, you have got to straighten up and fly right. Before we close out here today, let me thank our other two underwriters that are giving us the chance to be able to talk to you in this manner, and I want to thank them for that. And the first one up is Moink. our longtime sponsor here. Let me put it this way. We've got a math problem in this country. Only 2% of Americans are farmers, yet 100% of us eat. We eat what they grow. We eat what they process. That's why an eighth generation farmer founded this organization called Moink. You can help save the family farm and reduce your environmental imprint, all while enjoying the highest quality meat on earth. The best bacon, the best steak, chicken, the best salmon. You'll never get it in a grocery store as good as you'll get it from Moink. It's coming from a family farm that's independent, or it's coming from Alaskan fishermen who do things differently. It's not a factory. Save the family farm and join the Moink movement today. Sign up at moinkbox.com/rumble. And listeners to my podcast get free bacon for a year. That's right, free bacon for a year by signing up with Moink. 1 year of the best bacon you'll ever taste, but this is only for a limited time. It's spelled Moink, M-O-I-N-K, moinkbox.com/rumble. You got that? moinkbox.com/rumble. And be sure and thank them for supporting this podcast. And finally, our last underwriter that we want to mention today and thank for their wonderful support is Stamps.com. So we're already now going into our third month of the new year. And, you know, the excitement of the new year has pretty much worn off by now. And it's time to find your groove and keep things going. And that also means when it comes to running a small business and how you ship things. And there's no better way to do that than Stamps.com. Stamps.com and their app, it's like a post office that's in your pocket. So you can stay on top of things even when you're on the go. It's right there with you on your phone. You can get up to 89% off United States Postal Service and UPS rates. Plus, Stamps.com automatically tells you your cheapest and fastest shipping options, so you don't have to navigate all over the place to figure out how do I get from A to B to C. It's a one-stop shop for all your shipping and mailing needs. For 25 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable to over a million businesses, so keep your mailing and your shipping moving at the speed of your business with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code RUMBLE for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com and click the microphone that's at the top of the page and enter the code RUMBLE. And thank you, Stamps.com, for supporting this podcast. Well, okay, we're gonna close up shop here. But before we do that, I began the podcast here talking about how great it is people showing up to demonstrate, to protest, to have their voices heard, whether it's one person or 1,000 people. My enormous thanks to the pro-Palestinian groups that have been organizing this, but also to Jewish Voice for Peace. Thank you so much for making your voice heard. There was also something that happened yesterday. I'm sure you read about it by now or saw it on TV. For the second time here since the situation in Gaza and in Israel on October 7th, it's the second time yesterday that somebody decided as a protest to set themselves on fire and protest what the Israeli government was doing. This is a horrible thing. I mean, for those of us old enough to remember Vietnam and the Buddhist monks who would set themselves on fire in downtown Saigon to protest the war, to try and stop the war, they were willing to actually give up their lives so that everybody would see the horror of it all. That happened yesterday again, this time in Washington, D.C., outside the Israeli embassy. A United States Air Force officer, active duty, Air Force officer. He had notified the press and he made a statement standing outside the gates of the embassy that he could no longer tolerate nor support his government, the one that he serves as an active duty officer in the U.S. Air Force. Could no longer
be any kind of a participant in something that is a slaughter of civilians, that is a form of genocide. And so he asked those who were standing there on the sidewalk to do what they could do to free Palestine, support the Palestinian people, do not support our war that we're funding against these innocent civilians. And then took some, I assume, some kind of petrol and doused himself with it, struck the lighter, and set himself on fire. Now, as I'm recording this, as of, you know, late Sunday night, they said that he was still alive. They had taken him to the hospital with serious burns, life-threatening burns. This is not the kind of protest anybody wants to see. And I hope this man who served his country here lives. I hope his family's okay. You know, it's got to be pretty bad if somebody has to go to that extent to have their voice heard. Man, we live in a dark time. And none of us want any of this to continue. It has to stop. President Biden, you and you alone can stop this. Nobody else is standing with Netanyahu. All around the world, all sorts of people, all sorts of political beliefs, religions, races. It's you. And in the polls are going to open in another 24 hours here. And people like me, and there's going to be thousands of them, are going to mark uncommitted. They're not going to vote against you. Well, some will, but generally, it's to send a message to you that there are going to be many people who are not going to vote in November. They're just not going to show up. That's the worst thing that can happen. You've got to do the right thing. Not token stuff like you've been doing, like, oh, you're not going to deport any Palestinians from the U.S. for the next 18 months. That's not what is needed. What is needed right now is to pull the plug. Pull the plug on the slaughter. Pull the plug on the genocide. Pull the plug on the apartheid. These are not my words. These are the words from Jewish Voice for Peace. These are the words of the UN. These are the words from leaders all over the world who like you and support you and have supported Israel. That's it, though. They're done. They're done with this. No more money for armaments. No more military money until this thing is resolved. And if you don't agree with me, I understand, I respect you, but hopefully you've got to know that the jig is up here. The game's over. Nobody's going to support this kind of madness anymore, other than mad people. That's not me, and that's not the majority of Michiganders. And I know a lot of people will have a hard time marking uncommitted on Tuesday. You'll still get to vote for Biden in November. We're going to do everything to make sure Trump doesn't win. But now it's kind of out of our hands because too many people, not you and I necessarily, but too many people have already made up their minds. They're not going to vote for Trump, but they're not going to show up. I ask everybody to, especially my fellow Michiganders, come Tuesday, send a message, a strong message. And let me tell you, by doing this, You're saving Biden too. You're saving Biden from himself. He made the wrong decision going and hugging a monster. And he won't undo that for some reason. It can't be because he doesn't want another 4 years, right? It's not that. Because any sane, intelligent person knows that what he's doing is risking the return of Donald Trump. Call any family or friends you have, text them, email them, who live in Michigan. Tell them to vote in the Democratic primary on Tuesday and to mark uncommitted. They'll have time in November once Biden fixes what he's done, stops the damage, to vote for Joe Biden and to stop Donald Trump. But Tuesday, we have an immediate mission, and that is no more killing children, babies, no more trying to push them into the desert. President Biden, you have to do the right thing. Please, let us help you. I hope you wake up on Wednesday morning to a brutal awakening. We're different in Michigan. It's easy, or it's not easy. But we have a long history. And you have to listen to Michigan. This is Michael Moore. This is my podcast, Rumble. Thanks to my executive producer and editor, Angela Vargas, and to all of you who are listening, and especially to all of my friends, family, neighbors in the state of Michigan. We can stop the killing if we send the message. Be well, everyone. Peace.